This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey everybody, it's Mike here. I just need to give you a quick disclaimer before this very interesting and exciting interview with Todd Linden. We recorded this before all the Emilio Estevez news came out, so none of that is mentioned, but it's still an excellent interview, and I'm excited for you to hear it right now.
What's the one thing all great teams have in common?
Great coaching.
Try to suck up to me, Andrew.
Hey! Goldberg! I bet if that dunk was a cheeseburger, you'd stop it!
No, I agree. I would not be an acid physically. I have more of a podcast body.
It's the Quack Attack Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Anyone know where I can find District 5? I'm Mike. That's Tommy.
Hello, everyone.
That's Kevin.
Hey, y'all.
Welcome to the Quack Attack Podcast, the definitive Mighty Ducks podcast. We have another guest. This is another big one. I'm excited about this one. We have Todd Linden. He is writer and executive story editor for Mighty Ducks Game Changers. Got the writing credits on episode 6 and episode 10, the finale. Todd, thank you for being here. Executive story editor, very cool title. What does that actually mean?
Very cool. You know, I can't even totally tell you where these titles came from. They're all like levels that came up from the ranks that the Writers Guild, I think, helped create. And so, you know, you start at staff writer, and then by the, you know, if you keep working your way up, you're executive producer. And so, yeah, it's kind of like, it goes staff writer, story editor, executive story editor, then you're to like co-producer or producer, co-exec producer, and then up to exec producer. Yeah, so it's just all levels, but they have very little meaning besides, you know, maybe how much money you can try to get out of it.
That's pretty nice.
So I'm still in the lower echelon of that, but
yeah. So, you know, we talked to Josh and Kathy, we talked to Steve Brill, we talked to Adam F. Goldberg. They've mentioned you are sort of the guy. You were the Mighty Ducks fan before coming on the show. You're throwing out the old school pitches. I'm interested to hear your sort of story with the Mighty Ducks and how it all started for you.
Sure. But you know what? Before I say that, just hearing that, I want to give credit to the other writers too, because we had other fans too. I don't want to take all that credit. Marissa Berlin, who I co-wrote episode 10 with, she grew up on Ducks. She's a fan. And then we had Dario and Demir Kunitsia, and they have a really crazy story. They were born in Bosnia and then ended up being refugees at the Czech Republic before they were able to make it to America. And their story, they watched those Duck movies while in the Czech Republic. And so like it meant something to them too. So I don't want to take credit from them, but yes, I was a fan growing up. You know, it was just the perfect time. I think I was the perfect age to when that first movie came out. 92 it was, right?
Right.
So I was right in that sweet spot, and it stuck with me. It's so crazy to think, like, who would have thought that all this time later I'd get to write lines for some of these characters, for Gordon Bombay, and like I mean, like it's so surreal and just so awesome. And I feel very grateful to be on this show.
And do you like remember seeing it in theaters, or like, were you a VHS guy? How did it come into your purview?
I can't totally remember when I saw the first movie. I probably saw it in theaters, but definitely a VHS guy too. And, you know, I think one thing that people don't have as much anymore, like now it's like you really need to stay a fan and be a fan and keep watching it over and over on your own proactively. But like back then, like, you know, those random channels, TBS or like anything, would just like air these things. And so that was like, you know, Mighty Ducks was like one of those movies where like I loved it when I first saw it, And then I would just see it on somewhere and I'm like, oh, well, I like Mighty Ducks. So I'm just going to stop on this channel and watch it. And it's just like one of those things that you just end up watching over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, you get on the random like movie channels that are like not Showtime or Stars or something. It's just like a random one. And Mighty Ducks was on that a lot. I definitely get that. So how does this whole thing come full circle? Like, how do you end up, you know, getting the opportunity to write on Game Changers?
From my point of view, it was pure luck, because I did not know that this show was coming. I hadn't heard about it. I think they kept it pretty secret that they were doing it. And it was just one of those amazing moments. Like, you always look in your email inbox and you hope for something cool to come, and nothing. Like, when does that ever happen? But like, out of the blue, in October 2019, before they had even announced the series, like before they announced it was getting picked up or anything, so I didn't know, I got an email from my manager, from her assistant, and it said, meeting : Josh Goldsmith, Kathy Espa, and Steve Brill, re Mighty Ducks. And I'm like, what? I was like, is this some kind of typo? Like, first of all, Mighty Ducks, what are they talking about? Like, this is a movie from a long time ago. I have no idea what they're referring to. Plus, like, I've heard nothing about this. So I like clicked on it and it said like they want to meet with you on for this new series. And I just was like, I immediately got up and walked out of the, like, I was in this room, which is kind of like my office here, and I got up and I went to my wife, who was in a room a couple, you know, rooms over. And I was just like, I just got this email about meeting on the Mighty Ducks. And she's like, what? I was like, yeah. Like, it was just this surreal moment where, like, it was crazy. It was crazy. So anyway, out of the blue email, I came to find out that Kathy and Josh had been asking some of their writer friends for recommendations, and a mutual friend of ours, Vijay Patel, who I'd worked with on a show years ago, mentioned my name. So they had read me and liked me, and so they wanted to set up a meeting. But it was so cool from my end, because I it was just out of nowhere. It was crazy.
So is your go-to move on every like show, you just shout out, here's things that I like. And so if you ever want to pitch something, I like the Mighty Ducks, I like Animaniacs, and I like the original Toy Story, and that's it. So when you reboot them all.
I mean, God, that should have been what I did. I mean, like, in this, so yeah, in this case, you know, when you go into these meetings, if you're lucky, it's hard enough to get a showrunner meeting to like really be down to like one of the last few being considered for a job. It's just so tough, and they don't come around often necessarily. And so when you go and you usually, like, if it's a totally new show, sometimes you get to either read or watch the pilot. Sometimes it's a show that's, you know, had a season or two already, so you've hopefully seen some. And, you know, there's a lot of times out there that you don't totally relate to the stuff, but you, like, you want the job, and you can find things that you relate to. You can always find something that makes you excited, but some things will make you more excited than others. There's definitely been a couple meetings I've gone on in the past where I had to really work hard why I connected to it or why I liked it. But this one was just so easy. I was like, this is like my childhood dream come true right here. This is getting to, like, this would. So I went into that meeting and I probably gushed a little too much, but it was genuine. And I think Steve Brill especially could see that. Like, you know, I remember him even asking, he was like, what did you like about the movies? Like, I think he just wanted some of, and by the way, he deserves all the props in the world. So maybe he was testing me. Maybe he was going to see if I like kind of stumbled and didn't really have an answer, just to see if I was lying. But it was all genuine. So
did you drop any quotes from the original movies in the meeting?
I think I kept, I was so nervous in that. I think a lot of times when I'm nervous like that, I get jumbled and I can't necessarily pick out like those specifics. So I think I remember just saying how much I love the curmudgeonly coach who gets turned around and by a ragtag group of kids. And, you know, that's always been like the world to me. And I can't remember what other specifics I gave, but it was enough to prove to him in the moment that I was a real fan.
So did they ask you like hypotheticals on the spot? It's like, what's Fulton Reed doing today? Or is it a little bit more professional, if you will?
Yeah, I don't think they didn't ask me any questions like that. They and a lot of times, I mean, I guess it depends on who's running the meeting and like what they want to try to find out from you. But a lot of times they won't ask you specifics on like if you have story ideas and stuff, only because if you were to pitch one and they liked it, but they didn't end up hiring you, but then they might want to either use that idea, or maybe they come up with an idea that they forgot about yours, but it was similar to something you pitched. There's always a chance of like somebody suing and being like, hey, you took my idea, you didn't pay me. So oftentimes in these types of meetings, they don't necessarily ask you for new ideas. And it didn't get into asking what I thought the characters were doing today, but.
So you end up getting the job, obviously.
Yeah.
Is there, you know, when you start going in there, is there like immediate talk like, hey, how are we bringing the old Ducks back? Or how did that sort of whole reunion thing come about?
There was definitely always talk of how can we bring some of these guys back and like, you know, who can we get? And we knew it was up in Canada. When we started the room, it was before COVID. So we didn't know there would be those restrictions, but it was always shooting in Canada that season. And yeah, we always talked about how can we do it. And we were kind of zeroing in on like there'd probably be some episode to really focus in on it. And I think it was Dario and Demir who might have pitched this version of this specific like, let's do some kind of event where they can celebrate the history of the Ducks. I think it was them. And once they said that, like it just kind of clicked and we were all like, yes, that feels right. And it was, you know, it's tough because to Josh and Kathy's credit, they wanted to build a new world. And so they brought in, obviously it's a whole new team and everything. And so we had to make sure that we were staying true to that storyline too. So there wasn't like, we knew we couldn't like just branch off. I mean, I would love to do full arcs with the and all that stuff, like that would have been amazing, but you know, we had to limit it in the sense that we were still trying to service these new characters and their storylines. So it was like, how could we fit something in that could both celebrate the history of this movie franchise but also fit into the world and let us tell our like the story that they want to tell as well.
And at what point did they tell you, or did you know, and maybe it was like you always knew, but that Bombay was back and he was, you know, kind of back to being curmudgeonly, kind of run down? When was that told to you? And, you know, what was kind of the process there with Gordon? And was it like, hey, there's negotiations, maybe it goes one way, maybe it goes another way, et cetera?
Yeah, So in the meeting, I remember in the meeting I had with them, the interview, they had told me at that time, like that they weren't sure, like they might be getting Emilio. They weren't sure if it was going to work out. They were still in talks. So they did kind of have like a couple different versions, and it excited me, but I was like, oh, don't get too excited. You know, who knows? And when we first started the room, it was kind of the same. They were like, there was like a path. Luckily we found out pretty early on. So they had kind of maybe a different character that could have been the Bombay if necessary. I mean, it would have been a totally different person, obviously, but like might've filled out that role. But they were talking to him, and then, yeah, I just remember they came in like, he's going to do it. So we're going to go with what we were starting to talk about for the Bombay route. And it was very exciting to know that like it would really bring back that history with him in it.
Did COVID just totally screw everything, or was it not as big because you guys really did want to go with, hey, these are new characters. We don't just want to have like Averman dropping one-liners in every episode, or, you know, what were some of the challenges there? Did you have to do a ton of rewrites?
For 106 specifically, for that, for the Spirit of the Ducks.
Well, for the entire season, was it always just like, yeah, hey, one episode dedicated, and COVID obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess there was a couple of things we had talked about, maybe bring them back for even beyond that. That was definitely always the main episode we had targeted even before we knew about COVID. So like that was going to be, but like, I remember that there was like an idea. I don't know if we would have done it either way, but like there was an idea that like maybe in episode 10, you know, when he ends up giving them the old Duck jerseys, that perhaps we could have had those Ducks come back, some of those Ducks come back and like bring their jerseys from their homes almost as if like they still had them and pass them out. And like, we thought that would be super cool to do that. But that was definitely not going to happen after COVID hit, because the quarantining that they would have had to do to get back up there and everything like that, it just wouldn't have worked out. But I think even from the start, that 106 became the episode that we're like, this is where we can definitely celebrate some of that history. And we would have probably tried to find a couple other cameos to put in, but once COVID happened, it was not meant to be. It was going to be too difficult.
So the backstories in 106 that are kind of revealed, Connie, state senator, Averman, limo driver, which are you taking credit for?
Well, gosh, it's always a group process and we're always trying to work together. It was nice when Josh and Kathy kind of pulled me aside and told me they were going to give me this episode to write, which was super exciting. I think they did it because they saw that I had the fandom and that I would hopefully do some justice to these characters. And I think they trusted me with that. So let's see. I think when I went into it, Averman is bringing in the limo was the limo was my pitch. I wanted to bring that limo back in, and so when they agreed to that, I was like, Averman makes sense for that, like he has an old limo, like, because I think he would love that. I think I can just picture Averman like always keeping the window down to the back and talking to whoever's back there, like that guy's made for that kind of thing. So it just made sense to me that we could get that limo in with him being a limo driver. Connie also, I think, was when I was writing it and giving her a job, like I gave her state senator because she's a strong woman and with, you know, a lot of passion, and I could just, you know, I didn't want it to go too big. Like if she's like in the US Senate, that's like, it just felt right, like a local but powerful state senator that, you know, can make some change and stuff. And once that worked for her, it just felt like was like the guy. I liked him just like proudly being by her side. there was talk in the writer's room. I have to be honest, I was against it, but there was talk of like, oh, should Connie and Charlie be married? but to me, and like, which would have been like a cool twist, I get it, like I understand why some of them were saying that. To me, I just felt like, you know, we saw Connie and Guy in the movies, we rooted for that, and it just felt right to, especially since they weren't going to have huge arcs in the show and we were going to just get to spot where they were now, it just felt right to me that the two of them got married, which that was decided on before I wrote the script. I didn't just like put that in, like we all kind of came to that conclusion. But the kids, I think in my very original version, I think I'd given the line of I'd name my kid after that guy to Adam Banks, but it made sense to give it to Guy and Connie because we were talking about their kids within it. And then who else?
We had Fulton as the construction worker.
Yeah. And I went back, I listened to your 106 review, and you guys were hoping for more from Fulton, which I get that. Like, you know, we talked about him and we had some different ideas that I don't totally remember, and like giving him some things that might have given him more power and things like that. But when it came down to it, we really liked this idea of the smashing window and introducing him, especially since he was kind of going to be our way in and he was going to be the first one we met. Like, it just felt really fun and couldn't really think. You guys pitched, I think, on your podcast, he threw a pen from his business meeting or something like that. I remember listening to, but, but you know, it just felt, it made sense again. Like, you know, it could have been fun having him in a lot of different roles, but it felt fun to have this thing just smash Bombay's window and see him out there. And I think that, again, like, I think he probably enjoys, like, you know, not looking down on construction workers, it's like a great job. And I think he probably loves his life. And so, yeah, it was that's kind of the genesis of his role too.
Awesome.
I will say that moment, I think for us and a lot of the fans out there, was very much a goosebumps moment whenever the window gets shattered, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get to watch, obviously I didn't get to go up when they shot it and stuff. So Steve, who directed that episode, did send me a couple times. He sent me some footage that they were shooting, which was awesome. But, and then he let me watch a rough cut of it after. So yeah, like when I saw it, it I knew it was coming and it was just like, oh man, this is awesome. Like, this worked out. Like, this is super cool. In fact, I think I'd overwritten that scene. They cut it out and they should have, I mean, listen, between time and budget, like we had to cut down a bunch of stuff, but I think I even had him like give Bombay a chance to like use the thing, and then he smashes another window, and then they're like, all right, we're gonna get out of here. Like I just wanted to have fun with them as much as I could, but it was limited time that I could put into it, since we had the other stories to tell in that episode as well.
Yeah, let's finish out these characters that appeared. So we have Adam Banks as public defender, and then Ken Wu.
Yes, Adam Banks. I think I might have found that in the writing. I think when I was writing it, thinking about the character, I was like, you know, this makes sense for him. The opposite of what he grew up on, like as he said, like the line, you know, that he said, like, you know, I learned a long time ago to root for the underdog. I think it's like really nice for his character and shows the impact that Bombay had on his life, that, like, you know, he was going to go out there and do some good in the world. And then Ken Wu, I don't believe we give a job, do we? I don't think we.
Not really. I don't think. Yeah, no. He's really just sort of in the background. Other than the breadsticks.
Yeah, and that one, I will give that to Steve Brill all the way. He I had kind of forgotten that moment, to be honest, from D2, and he's like, oh, you know, one thing that the fans love about Ken Wu is that sticks, gloves, shirt thing, and so he pitched that to me to put that in, and it worked out nicely. It was fun.
Awesome. Ken Wu, season 2.
He didn't get a job. I mean, listen, I don't know what he would be. I don't think he'd really be this, but how cool would it be if he was like Disney on Ice? Like, he was really used that skating to his advantage. I mean, listen, we saw him on the ice in 106. He's still really good. If he had stopped skating altogether, like, if he was just some businessman, then I don't know if he'd have that kind of skill anymore. So clearly he's got to do something with some skating, I would think, but I don't know. Yeah. We never landed on something for him. So maybe down the line, who knows?
So I think you just pitched your next spinoff. Ken Wu is doing all the Disney on Ice shows.
It.
Like, Disney's big into, like, hey, let's just redo the Lion King. Let's just redo it. Now you can do it again with Ken Wu on Ice and throw in like a murder mystery in there or something. And 10 episodes, easy.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to start thinking about that. Yeah, murder mystery, Disney on Ice, Ken Wu, Detective Ken Wu. Oh, I like it.
He's a detective now.
Yeah. He's just one of those up and coming private eyes.
He's got to go undercover. There's this murder mystery at this like big skating, you know, show. It's like, who knows how to skate? It's like Miss Congeniality. There's like, oh, just throw Sandra Bullock out there because she's like an attractive woman, and Ken Wu, you know how to skate, get on there, you're gonna play Todd's work, then, you know, Beauty and the Beast.
But yeah, you don't know, I mean, because listen, here's the thing. They think that the murderer was Goofy, but anybody can get into that Goofy suit. Like, you don't know who was
in the suit.
Like, you're going to have to go real dive deep into that to find out who the murderer is.
Man.
It's not so simple.
This can't wait for the show in 2024.
Yeah.
What's it called then? Is it just On Ice or
Murder on Ice?
Yeah.
No, I think
we can workshop it.
Yeah, we should workshop it. I don't know yet. I don't know, but that we'll see in 2024 coming up.
This is going to be incredible.
He'll have like three kids who are part of like the On Ice crew who like kind of look up to him, and he calls them, "That's my Wu-Tang Clan."
I love it.
All right. Let's get back on track. I am excited for this. I'm excited for Tommy, for Todd to really break Tommy as the budding superstar writer in Hollywood now. So look forward to Tommy's new career. I do want to ask a very sort of specific question here. So in the media images that Disney sent out, there's an image of Adam Banks and Guy throwing or getting prepared to throw what appears to be snowballs at this Ducks gala. Do you have any recollection of what was supposed to happen? Because it seems to be cut out.
Yeah, but I never saw that footage. So originally we were going to go a lot further in that scene. We were going to like have a snowball fight basically inside. Very originally we were going to have it outdoors, and like it was going to be snowing out, but they were going to have kind of like a nice, you know, tent space or something where they're having this nice gala, and then the Ducks were going to crash it. And after they like, you know, did their quacking and did their speech for Bombay, they were going to by the way, I didn't pitch the flying V entrance. That was probably Brill, maybe Josh and Kathy. When I saw that, that also gave me goosebumps. I was like, that is so perfect. Like that what an amazing entrance they gave them. But prior to doing that, we had the very original draft that I'd written was them kind of coming in, throwing snowballs, making a mess of things. And then they were going to take over the podium and start talking on behalf of Bombay. After that, Alex was going to, we were going to have not only the snowballs from outside, but then when we moved it inside into the rink, we were thinking like there could be like a shaved ice like cart or something that we could do that they could pull it from. And then like Alex was going to secretly take one out and maybe chuck it at her boss and then be like, oh, I don't know where that came from, kind of thing. But so they were going to make a lot more mayhem. There was going to be a lot more mayhem. And I forgot that they actually even shot it because the COVID restrictions, the timing it took on set, I think it might have gotten cut down a lot anyway. And then I guess they did shoot some of that, but it might have felt, I remember there was debate on like, is this too crazy? Like, would these adults go in and kind of go that far? So there was debate on if we should even do it. And I think ultimately they made it would have been fun, but they made a good move too, like to kind of keep it more real in that moment as well. But I forgot they even shot it until you just told me that. But yeah, that could have been, that's what could have been.
There you go.
Fight in the rink.
Mystery solved there. So what is sort of the progress on season two? Are you guys close to being done and having it all fleshed out, or where are you guys at in that sense?
There's still a lot to do, but we have like a lot of fun stuff that we've been talking about, and it's it'll be a fun season. And you know, like I think when Josh and Kathy and Steve pitched this show in the first place, they kind of were like, you know, each season is kind of like a movie, and that's how we want to play it. And so it's fun because, you know, I thought season one was a cool movie that had a like led to a fun end. And now we're going to do some new stuff this season, and it'll have a little bit of its own life, and it's going to be cool. It's going to be very cool.
So yeah, we know where season one ended, obviously. And I forgot to ask this earlier. Was that always the plan to have the D5 jerseys come back in the end? Like how early on was like the ending set up from when you guys started the beginning?
I don't think that the idea of the jerseys coming back in the end came up until like we kind of really started discussing both the return of the Ducks and how they're going to play into the team. And then especially when we started discussing like, okay, they're going to have this game, like this game after the championships and stuff like that. Cause there were, you know, I think a version like a very early on, and it, like it never got this far, but like of maybe them losing that championship game, the actual championship game, playing that out and losing it, but they had already, but like somehow winning the Ducks name anyway. But then, yeah, it was pitched in the room and people started riffing on it, this new ending of like, no, have the injury keep them from playing in that final game. And then they get this, you know, secret game off the ice for it all, for what we really care about, which is the Ducks name. And that, I think once we got excited about that, then it was like, oh, and then the old Ducks can come back and they'll have the jerseys in the third period. And yeah, I think it kind of went from there. But
yeah, so we're going to move on to the Quack question in a bit, but I just am curious, like, what was it? What was the viewing experience like for you to, you know, have been a Mighty Ducks fan, right? Be a writer on the show and then have it all come together and watch this series yourself.
Surreal. I mean, it's surreal. It's so crazy. Like, and like, then like, you know, you get into that writer's room and ultimately you're working hard, trying to break stories, trying to make things fit and work. And so you like, I kind of, there's just plenty of times where I'm just like, okay, how is this going to fit? And I forget of like, even what story, like, I just want to make the story work or whatever it is. But then you'd like take a step back and you're like, I'm doing this for like the Mighty Ducks franchise. Like, again, like, I think I mentioned this earlier, but like as a kid, like who would have ever thought that like I'd get to write for some of these characters in the end. And so, yeah, then watching the series, like since it was in Canada, it was during COVID, like there was no way we were going to get to go up there and see anything ourselves. I'd gotten to see, as I said, Brill sent me a rough cut of 106, but outside of that, yeah, I didn't see anything. And also when we kind of had finished the room with the scripts, I mean, we knew that there might be some changes just because they were going to have to figure things out on the fly with the COVID protocols and the budget and trying to fit everything in. So I mean, it was all relatively similar to how, when the writer's room ended, but you know, some things changed, some things got cut, some things got added. And so I got to also watch it as a fan, like kind of, even though I knew it was going to happen, but it was just cool to be a part of it and still be a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I know I'm going to want to get to the Quack question. At what point over the last 6 years did you become aware of this podcast, and was it mandatory listening for season one? And like, how excited are you to be talking to us right now?
Admittedly, I had not heard of the podcast until season one, until I was on staff last year. Then we found out, you know, we heard from Brill that I think it was that like this, you guys had this. And I don't get to listen every week, but I have listened some, and it's very exciting. Honestly, it's fun to put faces to the voices. It's kind of cool in that sense. Like, you guys are Duck celebrities yourself now. Come on. Like,
nice.
I think you're taking that credit, but give yourself the credit too.
Yes. Yes. We are taking as much credit as we can possibly get.
I know you want to get on the show. I know you want to get.
That's true.
Which is above what I can probably do for you. You got to keep on Brill for that. But maybe
you're not giving yourself.
You're going to have another ally in the room now to try.
There we go.
Yeah.
Each scene is going to end with Todd being like, and then there's these three guys in the background selling shaved ice, trying to get a snowball fight going.
There you go.
Yeah. That's slowly our strategy. We're just going to keep befriending the writers until we win over the room.
You know, I think the reason why this particular interview with me came about was because I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I was like, because Adam Goldberg had just come on, and I was like, oh man, like they should totally like reach out to the writers and like talk to the writers of the episodes, get some behind the scenes stories. Like if just, cause like, here's the thing, you guys did this for like 5 years where you just had to make up stuff on the movies that people have been watching for years. I'm like, this is such an opportunity. They could like talk, and they're like, oh, so you're saying you want to be on the podcast. I was like, no, I don't need to be on the podcast. Good. And then as that conversation's happening, Brill is like, I'm going to email them. And he emailed and the rest is history, but I'm sure you can get some of the other guys to come on and talk if you ever want them to.
Yes.
I feel like this is like penance, like whoever's in the doghouse that day, it's like, all right, I'm emailing the podcast guys, they're gonna be reaching out to you now, so
yeah,
like you better be writing some good shit, otherwise we're making you on the podcast.
Yeah, otherwise you're getting grilled on the podcast.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. If you have any tips for, you know, how to sneak into a crowd scene or, you know, be an extra, let us know. But let's move on to the quack question here. So we put out a call to the quacklites, as we call them, the fans, and we picked the best ones, try to answer them. We told them you were going to be on the show. So they're very specific to you. Kevin, do you have a quack question today?
I do. This comes from OG Quackalite Jared Beasley, who's JBeasley777 on the Discord. His question is, what is one D1 that didn't make it to D2 duck? You would love to write in and update where they are now in life. Mike can probably help with the list here.
What's one, you said D1 duck that didn't
that
make
did
it?
Did not move on to D2.
Yeah, so you have Tommy and Tammy, you have Peter Mark, Dave, you have Carp.
Yeah, Dave Carp, I would say, because I know that in reality now he's a chiseled man. I think that would just be so fun to see that transition. In fact, I'll be honest, my original draft, sorry, my original draft, we weren't sure who we'd get. It was months before we were ever even going to shoot. So it's like really starting to do it. I think I had 11 ducks in my first draft, and then we were going to like see who Brill could get and who would work out with. And then again, COVID hit and it made it even more challenging. So, I think it would be fun to out of those choices to see where Dave Carp is, how he got there. To me, it feels like he's, and this is not what the show would necessarily do, but to me, if we ever saw him, like it just feels like he'd be like a model in LA or something, like and like coming back to make his appearance now in Minnesota, back where he came from. But
he could also be like running the fat camp now.
That's true.
Heavyweights, yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah, Dave Carp. I had this little bit that I'd written in. Where Bombay just didn't believe it was him, and he was like, wait, Carp? And like Dave Carp just nods and just says Dave Carp. Like, I really wanted to do that, but you know, it just didn't work out.
Nice. But were there any like last minute scratches that you had a whole thing written out for? And just
I honestly once, you know, I'll be completely honest, Brill was in contact with everyone, and so I never, that's part of the reason why I wrote so many, because I just wanted to have a little fun with it. But I really wrote it not knowing who we might get of the group. But yeah,
perfect. And let's I guess you got to save those, you know, what you have just in case for season 2, season 3.
You never know. And by the way, history could change. Like that was my fandom, like getting to write that first draft. So as we discuss more, like I would pitch it to the room, some of these things, but it could always change if we see some of these guys down the line, what their history might be. but it's all exciting.
Perfect. Well, we gotta let Todd go because he's got to go to the writer's room and finish season two. So we can't hold him up too longer here. So for us, thequacktech.com, go there, contact us at quacktechpod on Twitter, facebook.com/quacktechpod. Go to iTunes, give us 5 stars. Tell us what you think of all the Ducks backstories. Tell us your favorite. Tell us what you think of the stuff that got cut out that was revealed here today. Watch Disney or Disney Plus, Mighty Ducks Game Changer Season 1. We still got to juice those numbers just in case Disney Plus is playing for attention. Disney Season 2 coming out 2022 sometime. And remember, Ducks fly together.
Ducks fly together.
Ducks fly. Ain't no turning back.